Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, CFRO. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang,
Hi.
Our technician, John Pranger, who is running the controls, and our regular co-host, Krista, is not able to be here today, so we are happy to once again have Marianne Varigan on the show to join today. Up on the program, after the upcoming events, John's Minute, and the news segments, we will be presenting our feature interview. I am happy to announce that we will have author, speaker, and educator Dr. Will Tuttle on the show today. He is the award-winning author of the profound book, The World Peace Diet, and this book reached number one on Amazon just a few weeks ago. This book, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony, has been called one of the most important books of the 21st century, and it explores the human relationship with food choices and animals and our world and makes a strong, solid case for veganism. I truly think that all human beings should take it upon themselves to read this book, and lucky for you, because you have a chance to win a copy of the book here on our show. That's right, we are giving away one copy of the book, The World Peace Diet, to a lucky listener who enters our draw. All you have to do to enter is submit your entry to our Facebook page under the Discussions tab or to our email address, which is radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. If you email us, just type contest entry in the subject line. And on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver, just submit your name there. It's as easy as that. The only stipulations for entering the contest are that you can't have won a prize from us in the last 6 months, and you must be available to pick up the book from the radio station in downtown Vancouver. We will draw our lucky winner live on the air next week, so stay tuned. So I went to see the film screening of Peaceful Kingdom, The Journey Home last week. This was the Canadian premiere of the second version of the film, which we had been waiting for 4 years, and it was created by the nonprofit organization Tribe of Heart, who also produced the eye-opening film The Witness in 2002. We had the producer of Peaceable Kingdom, James Levesque, on the show a few weeks ago for a great interview on Animal Voices. The film was shown as part of the Canada International Film Festival at the Edgewater Casinos Theatre, and by my count, about 120 people showed up. It certainly looked like most of them were comprised of many familiar faces to me, that is, people in the local animal rights and vegetarian community, but I do hope that there were also many attendees who were just average people, perhaps just curious about attending the festival or the film's content and not knowing much of what to expect. Of course, the film no doubt had a great impact on everyone in the film in the room who saw it. But I do believe that the main purpose for showing this film to people would be to open the hearts and minds of those who do not yet recognize a deep connection between human and non-human animals, which is what this film strove to convey. I found the film to be beautifully edited and presented in a meaningful way that cogently intertwined the stories of 7 people, each of whom were involved in the farming industry and had their own tales to tell of their interpersonal relationships with animals and how those developed throughout the time that they had to spend in each of their journeys. Among the 7 individuals were Howard Lyman, who we know as the Mad Cowboy, and his wife Willow Jean, Harold Brown, a former dairy cow farmer, and Casey Mell, who decided to become a humane officer to stop the injustices she saw when rescuing animals. And throughout each of their stories and viewpoints, we not only learn of their internal struggles, realizations, and transformations with regards to the animal abuse they witnessed or were a part of, but we also have the opportunity to witness for ourselves the special emotional and intrinsic behavior that the animals depicted in the film have to show and share. This is all behavior that we humans can certainly relate to on the same instinctive level as the animals. One of the strongest scenes in the film took place in telling the story of a huge animal rescue where hundreds of dead and rotting animals were found in and around the home of a proclaimed animal hoarder. It was truly a terrible sight to be seen, and they graphically showed the state of the property with many dead and dying animal carcasses lying around everywhere. Two of the people profiled, Casey Mell and Jason Tracy, were there and were able to rescue many of the living but starving animals, such as sheep, goats, and geese, from this decrepit situation to live at their sanctuary. And you could see that the animals, once they finally arrived at the sanctuary, truly and intuitively knew that they were finally in a safe haven, a safe place for them, even though they had never experienced such a thing in their whole lives before. The scene that they showed of a sheep jumping out of the transport truck onto the green grass of the sanctuary and giving literal leaps of joy as she bounded across the greenery was such an emotional scene of jubilation that I will never forget. and then separated from their babies, they showed how the mother sheep, who had just arrived at the sanctuary, kept looking for their lambs each time a new transport truck arrived at the sanctuary to drop off more animals. When the baby lambs were finally brought in and reunited with their mothers, that was truly a scene of happiness deserved in the story that began in great sorrow and despair. So I did like that the film not only depicted the bad and difficult to watch side of the issues, but also the good, showing that there really is hope for the future with how humans treat animals and to make it right. A running theme throughout the film was showing how violence contributes to the desensitization of human beings. One of the profiled characters tells us that the first time he slaughtered an animal, he felt bad. Then he kept doing it, and eventually he didn't feel anything anymore. Isn't this in actuality what happens to most human beings on Earth when they are faced with habitually committing acts of violence? And Farmer Brown tells us there is really no humane way to slaughter an animal. Humane is framed by three words, he tells us: compassion, kindness, and mercy. There is no polite way to take someone's life, no gentle way to kill anybody, and therefore no such thing as humane slaughter. These are words and thoughts that we must remember in sharing this earth with non-human animals who want to live as much as we human animals want to. Farmer Brown also says, in regards to killing animals, if it was truly a good thing, it would be a joyful thing. But I've never known anyone in my life that thought it was a joyful thing to slaughter. He remarks how he himself had the capacity since childhood to turn the switch on and off. He had compassion for his dog and for people, but then not for the animals that he killed and made into food on his farm. One final thought that is presented in the film that is worth repeating and sharing: as Homo sapiens, we are here to learn unconditional love for our whole community and not just for humans. That means we need to extend the circle of compassion to all of those around us, and especially, in my opinion, to animals. Watch out for this film and put your thinking caps on to show it to everyone you know. It should be coming out on DVD in a few months, and Liberation BC will also be showing it at a public screening here in Vancouver sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's right. You know, what really spoke to me about this film and what sets it apart from other animal rights films is that it doesn't just show the suffering and the cruelty. It shows the emotional world of these animals. Oh my God, they are so complex, and they form these family bonds that are just amazing to watch. And like you said, the part where the mother was separated from the baby and she spent days looking for the baby. Mm-hmm. And when they finally got the babies and released them out to the field, you saw every mm-hmm. mother mm-hmm. went to their own baby, and they knew which they ones were theirs.
Yeah, they were looking for their babies.
Their mm-hmm. babies. Yeah. And there were these two that didn't have parents. Somehow they were orphaned. And they kept going up to different mothers to try to nurse. And the mothers were kicking them away because that's not their babies. So, you know, and when we eat animals living in the city, we don't really think about that aspect of the animals. We're taking them away from their families and all the emotional things that they suffer through.
Right. Like mother mm-hmm. cows, for example, are known to pine and cry for their baby calves when they're, of course, taken away from them right at birth mm-hmm. Because the farmers need the mothers to save their milk for
humans.
Not for the baby cows.
So the baby cows get killed.
Yeah. And in the meantime, mm-hmm. the mother cows are pining and crying for their babies for days and days, and that's been documented many, many times.
Yeah. One thing to note also is that if we don't think about it, it's as if then it doesn't exist. So
out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So just because we don't think about it, then I guess they don't have those family connections.
Right.
And that's what we strive on this show to show you.
Exactly. They're just like us. Well, lots of things have happened this week, and I think the thing that stood out for me was what I've been occupying my thoughts and energy with the past couple of days. On Tuesday, an organization, an environmental organization called Dogwood Initiative, did a publicity stunt where they used live chickens. They actually threw live chickens around to make a point. So they went into an MLA's office and they took 6 chickens and they threw them around in the MLA's office, and they thought this was an appropriate thing to do to show that the MLA is chicken to talk and squawks a lot but doesn't do anything. So this organization thought it was a brilliant stunt, put it all over their website, front mm-hmm. page of their website, tweeted about it, and as soon as this information got out, people got really upset. Phone calls start coming in, emails, a Facebook group was set up, which got from 0 to 80 people overnight, and they started to change their stories. Mm-hmm. And which was very funny to watch because right. this is all online, so everything mm-hmm. is written down on record. So first, and when this start coming up, they start disassociating themselves from the protest, saying that they had nothing to do with the chickens and that it was one lonely activist who acted without their knowing, even though Marianne said...
I saw it on their news release on their website. It was all about the chickens in their news release.
So they promoted this event and were very proud of it until yes. they got a lot of flack from the public.
And then they started justifying it.
Mm-hmm. And this is an email from Gordon O'Connor, the forest campaigner. Just for the record, the chicken stunt had nothing to do with Dogwood Initiative. We organized a rally in the park across from the street from Ida Chong's office. While we were there, some other activists delivered the birds. Oh. Hey, and I'm told that the chickens were rescued from a very crowded egg farm where they were there living in 2-foot pile of their own filth. Mm. At least now that they have found a more comfortable home at the animal control farm outside of Victoria.
Oh, gee, that makes it all okay, isn't it?
So there's so many things wrong with that because, first of all, if an animal was rescued from a battery farm, mm-hmm. we all know what horrible shape those animals are in.
Right.
They have very, very brittle bones from years of laying eggs.
Missing and lots of feathers.
Yeah.
Missing lots of feathers. Mm-hmm. They have brittle bones.
They don't look like normal chicken.
Not at all.
And they have prolapsing uteruses from laying all the eggs. So when they said these animals are out at a farm, by the way, animal control does not run sanctuaries outside of cities. They euthanize. So, you know, that's, again, another lie.
and the chickens, actually, I saw a picture of them. They're clearly not battery farm
chickens.
They
got all their feathers.
Yeah, they look like pretty, you know, healthy chickens.
So this is a whole PR disaster for them. Mm-hmm. They just went from lie to lie to lie, and they wouldn't apologize. And finally, they did release an apology, which a lot of animal activists were not impressed with. So it was, there was a lot of lies going on. And we wanted to mention another thing about Dogwood Initiative. I think Allison had found something about...
Oh, yeah. Well, they're having... I was just looking on their website, and they're having a... it's called a Bounty of the Sea Barbecue to celebrate No Tankers Day in recognition of British Columbians' determination to protect our coasts from the threat of oil spill by serving hamburgers. And you said they'll be serving lots of salmon?
Salmon as well. So they're calling it a sea barbecue.
So they're trying to protect their coast. So they don't want the oil spill to spill on the fish and the seabirds.
And kill the life in the ocean. Mm-hmm.
However,
so we can eat them.
They want to protect the sea life so that they can eat them at their barbecue. Makes sense, right?
The biggest threat to the ocean is not, you know, maybe the tanker will spill, but people eating fish,
exactly.
Overfishing. And in Eating Animals, which is a book written by Jonathan Safran Foer, he talks about all the overfishing and all the bycatch. So he says if you're eating a plate of sushi, the amount of sea animals that died for that plate of sushi might as well stretch 5 feet across the table.
Oh, geez.
And it's because of bycatch, right?
Because of bycatch. So for an organization that wants to protect the ocean, they shouldn't be having a sea barbecue.
Well, I just don't understand how serving burgers and salmon at this supposedly celebratory barbecue, how does that celebrate, you know, saving our oceans? I don't see how an event based on killing, cooking, and serving the flesh of these animals that they're trying to protect has anything to do with celebrating and, you know, protecting the earth and the oceans.
Exactly.
People need to realize all the interconnections about our planet, and those mm-hmm. who inhabit the planet being all of our fellow creatures, and and you know, specifically, like, they're serving fish at a at a barbecue where they want to save the fish.
Yeah, to me that that speaks to the fact that it's not for the other creatures' sake that they are working towards. It's still human driven,
but it's,
where it's still selfishly driven for our sake.
They're saying to protect our coasts. I mean, the main...
Still for us, though.
The main detriment to our coasts is all those animals that get oil spilled all over them. And I do see an event like this as being akin to when the BC SPCA holds events where they serve hot dogs at. Come on, people, think and see the connections that are begging for you to be recognized. So at this time, I just want to remind our listeners out there to please join our Facebook group. It's called Animal Voices Vancouver. Please show your online support by going on there, and you'll get to receive advance notice of what's coming up on our show. Plus, we post all of our shows there as MP3s to listen to directly from the page, and there are some interesting discussions to join in and contests as well to enter. We also welcome your comments and suggestions about the show and our Facebook page, and you are also welcome and encouraged to send your comments and suggestions to our email address, if you prefer, which is once again radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And last but not least, we're on Twitter as well if you want to follow us there. Our Twitter name is Animal Voices YVR, all one word. You are listening to 102.7 FM Co-op Radio and CFRO, a community radio station in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And next up, we're going to be playing some Will Tuttle music. This is Turkey Song. Beautiful music. Now on to our events, and I think we're going to have some more Dr. Will Tuttle music in the background here. I hope John plays Fish Song for me while I'm talking about our upcoming events. Today on Friday, March the 26th, and every Friday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., there is an anti-fur leafleting event at Snowflake Furs Hotel Vancouver at 900 West Georgia Street in downtown Vancouver. Join Vancouver activists at the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver today and every Friday as they peacefully protest outside of the Snowflake Furs store, handing out leaflets to passersby about the fur industry. For more information, you can contact Lori Fitzgerald at lpacificrim@yahoo.ca. Today, after the fur demo at 1 o'clock p.m., there will be a seal hunt demo with Anthony Marr. Of course, you might remember Anthony from our show last week. We had him here. This demo is going to be in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery at Hornby and Robson in Vancouver. So after the fur demo, you are invited to join Anthony Marr, president of Heal Our Planet Earth, in front of the Art Gallery for a seal hunt demo. Anthony, of course, as I said, was on our show last week, and he actually used to do the Animal Voices show himself. Monday, March the 29th at 7 o'clock p.m. will be the opening of the Cultural Agents Animal Art Exhibit at Emily Carr University of Art and Design at 1399 Johnson Street at Granville Island in Vancouver. This exhibition seeks to continue the complex dialogues begun by critical thinkers, artists, and animal advocates alike regarding our tenuous relationship with animals. Cultural agents will raise questions about how cultures use animals to illustrate their social mores, religious or philosophical beliefs, and ultimately define themselves as a people. This exhibition will also highlight the presence of cultures within species of animals, a trait previously thought to be exclusive in humans. On Sunday, April the 4th at 10 a.m., there will be a meditation and mindful meal hosted by Earth Save Canada. This is at Dharma Kitchen Restaurant at 3667 West Broadway, Vancouver. Michael Ledzinski, a former monk, will present a mini course in meditation at this unique event. Following the mini course, a 100% vegan and mostly organic meal will be served here at Dharma Kitchen, one of Vancouver's premier vegan restaurants. The set menu for the lunch will be tamarind soup, sautéed mushroom, a Dharma bowl, which happens to be my favorite dish there, which is grilled artichoke hearts, eggplant, mushrooms, red onion, green and sweet peppers, zucchini and sun-dried tomatoes served with miso gravy over brown rice, as well as grilled tempeh and tofu steaks and basil tofu. Cost for everything is $15. And all are welcome to attend. To find out more and to register for this event, go to meetup.com and look up Vancouver Meatless Meetup. On Saturday, April the 10th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., a Powerful Voice Animal Rights Community Dialogue Series will present How Can We Best Work Together to Achieve Animal Rights? This is hosted by Liberation BC and takes place at Yadarada Yoga and Eatery at 628 Main Street in Vancouver. Come and join other like-minded activists to explore new and interesting ways of working together. This event will be a friendly conversation in a comfortable cafe-style setting. Three topics will be chosen at the end of the meeting, which will become the topics of the next three events in the series, which will likely be held in June, September, and November. The idea is to start to build systems of cooperation and collaboration that respect the work that we are all doing and our different goals, but enable us to work more effectively together. Collaboration and cooperation can mean more than forming coalitions or merging organizations. There are lots of ways that we can all work together, and some no one may have even thought of yet. If you are interested in attending, please register at http://apowerfulvoice.eventbrite.com. There is a $5 registration fee, and attendance is limited to 50 people, so please register soon. As of yesterday when I checked, there were only 15 spaces left. And I know you two are going to be going to that, right?
Oh, yeah,
I would too if I could. If you have an animal or a vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. And now, John, you have something to share with us.
Yes, I do. And yesterday, a Louisiana physician and PCRM member, that is Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, filed a complaint to the U.S. Department of Agriculture alleging that the Tulane University School of Medicine is in violation of the Federal Animal Welfare Act for using live pigs in a trauma training course for physicians. Asked its dean of Tulane to immediately replace the use of animals. The next course begins today. Advanced trauma life support courses teach procedures designed to treat acute trauma injuries in people. The American College of Surgeons, which oversees the advanced trauma life support courses, has approved the use of medical simulators, such as the Trauma Man system, to teach these courses. Yet Tulane continues to use live pigs. In these courses, numerous invasive procedures are practiced on anesthetized pigs. At the end of each course, the pigs are killed. So far, Tulane University's Senior Vice President and Dean, Benjamin Sachs, MB, has ignored pleas to change this method. So please help us today by calling or emailing Dr. Sachs today and urging him to end this cruelty and unnecessary practice. You can send an automatic email to the contact information, which is available on the PCRM website, pcrm.org. PCRM.org. That's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John. And that is a very important issue, as we all know that pigs are way more smarter than dogs, and they do suffer a lot. So on to the news. The Canadian Fisheries Ministry has increased the total number of seals that hunters will be able to slaughter during the annual Atlantic hunting season, which begins later this month. The quota for harp seals has risen to 330,000, up from 280,000 last year. The Fisheries Ministry says the increase is due to a growing seal population in the waters east of Newfoundland and Gulf of St. Lawrence. The harp seal population has tripled since the 1970s and is now estimated to be 6.9 million. I think that's a total lie. They haven't done a survey in years.
Yeah, but where do they get that from?
Isn't it true that mother seals have been aborting baby seals in the recent weeks?
Yeah, it's the record year of high temperature, so there's no ice where they used to be ice. So they're just aborting their babies in the water because there's no solid ice to be found.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, it's very devastating. I hate our government. Sorry to say that. Okay, next news. Activist Peter Young has his apartment raided by the FBI. You may remember him. He was on our show a few weeks back.
A few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They took my shoes, and there was no way within the scope of the warrant, says animal rights activist Peter Young. So I'm stuck with these dress shoes.
Not only that, they took his phones and all of his computers.
Cell phones, computers.
I think it was the whole house that he shares with some activists. Yeah.
So more than 50 items were taken in all, and nothing illegal was found, and there were no arrests. Mm. Young and others say the warrant is connected to the prosecution of Scott DeMuth. He's 22 years old, of Minnesota, who is accused of raiding animal research facilities at the University of Iowa in 2004. Young denies having any connection with that crime or DeMuth. Young, who has blogged critically of the DeMuth case, says the pretrial discussions revealed that DeMuth once referred to someone named P in his journal, and that is the sole basis for trying to link me to this crime in 2004 in Iowa, Young says. Young believes he's been targeted because of his vocal support of the Animal Liberation Front, an underground movement of radical activists known for sabotage of animal research scientists. The message is, if you vocally support ALF, we're coming after you, Young says, because that's all I'm guilty of.
Luckily, activists across the country, I guess, have been sending in phones and computers and even shoes to Peter.
Oh, really? That's great.
So they're all set up again.
And, you know, the devastating part of this is, you know, they're trying these animal activists as terrorists. And we know they're not terrorists because nobody in the animal rights movement has harmed a single human.
Right. We talked about this on the show when we had Peter on here about the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act.
Did you guys see front page news on 24 yesterday?
Nope. Can't say I regularly read that.
Well, PETA had a fun demo. They had a couple of girls shower curtains and showering in the middle of the street. And I guess their point was to make a point that eating meat uses a lot of water. So, you know, if you like 1 pound of beef or something...
I mean, the statistics do range depending on how the beef is raised and all that.
Yeah, but, so 1 pound of beef uses enough water for you to shower once a day for a whole year, and that's what they were trying to demonstrate. So it's, you know, if you're an environmentalist, stop eating meat.
I'm going to check out that picture.
Yeah, it's really
covered
fun.
Like all their, it's online.
Like all their demos, it's very visually interesting. From the Toronto Star, the Toronto Vegetarian Association is challenging carnivores across the province to give up meat every Monday as part of its new campaign for the North American Meatless Monday movement. We think it's a great way for us to reach out to people who might not be ready to consider going completely vegetarian, but who are interested in healthy eating, or they're interested in reducing their environmental footprint, says David Alexander, executive director of the Toronto Vegetarian Association. This month, they launched the www.meatlessmondays.ca and the Twitter account at meatlessto to spread the word with vegetarian tips and recipes. And this one from the LA Times. We've been following this story for 3 weeks now. The Santa Monica sushi restaurant facing federal charges for serving endangered whale meat closed its doors for good on Saturday. Yeah. According to a statement posted on the Hump's website, which called the decision a self-imposed punishment. The Hump hopes that by closing its doors, it will help bring awareness to the detrimental effect that illegal whaling has on the preservation of our ocean ecosystem and species, reads the statement on the restaurant's website. Phone calls to the restaurant and its attorney were not answered. So that's it. You're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
A community radio station in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Next up, we're going to be playing one more track of Dr. Will Tuttle's CD called Animal Songs, which actually can be purchased at worldpeacediet.org. You can actually buy a physical CD or download songs or the whole CD. If you download the whole CD, it's only $9.50 or 99 cents a song, and I recommend doing it. I have the CD myself. I really enjoy it. This song is called Alive.
Thank you.
Once again, that was a piece from Dr. Will Tuttle's CD entitled Animal Songs. He happens to be our next guest up on the show. Dr. Will Tuttle is an award-winning speaker, educator, author, musician, and Zen Buddhist master. His music, writings, and presentations focus on creativity, intuition, and compassion. He is the author of the book, The World Peace Diet, which reached number one on Amazon a few weeks ago, and it has been called one of the most important books of the 21st century, the foundation of a new society based on the truth of the interconnectedness of all life. We are very pleased to have him on the show today. Hello, Dr. Tuttle, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Welcome.
Yes, hi. Good to be with you. Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on the show today. I have to say that your book, The World Peace Diet, is probably in the top three of all the books that I've ever read as having had the most meaningful and profound impact on me, and I'm sure many other people who have read it can say the same. But for those of us who haven't heard of the book before, can you give us an introduction of what this book is about, as well as your past background and how you came to decide to write this book?
Yes, thank you. That's a big question, and I'll just try to answer it briefly. The book actually came out of many years of my own practice of transitioning to a plant-powered diet, a plant-based diet, not eating animal foods. And I didn't think a whole lot about it for a number of years. I mean, I was aware that my health was fantastic and that I wasn't contributing to violence towards animals, and this was back in the 1970s and early 80s. But as the years went by and I did more research, not only outer research in getting a master's degree, a PhD, and so forth, and studying a lot of anthropology, sociology, psychology, and history in our culture, and education. I have a PhD in education. I also did a lot of inner work, and I became a Zen monk and lived in Korea. And through all of that, I began to see that there's a huge disconnect in the culture that I was born into between the violence towards animals for food and the problems that we're having. And so I started telling my spouse, Madeline, that it would be great if someone would write a book that would give this big picture of our culture and how it's affected by our food choices and how we are all affected on many levels by our food choices, because people have talked about certain dimensions of that, how it's not good for your physical health, it's not good for you, for the environment, and it causes a lot of suffering for animals, and that's somewhat well known. But I think as I was looking at this whole thing, I realized it's even much bigger than that. And so she, it was kind of funny because she said, I kept telling her that it would be great to read a book that would give this big picture, and she started saying to me, yeah, just go ahead and maybe write it yourself, because I think if you want to read that book, you'll probably have to write it yourself. So I spent 5 years writing it, and the book came out about 4.5 years ago, and that's really what instigated my writing the book, and then we've been basically traveling and giving lots of lectures on these ideas and finding that more and more people are receptive when they hear these ideas, to see that eating animal foods is a hidden cause of most of our dilemmas and problems.
In writing The World Peace Diet, what ultimately did you want the book to achieve?
I actually, it's ultimately, I guess what I'd like writing The World Peace Diet to achieve is to get at least one person to go vegan. And
I think you've probably done more than that.
So I think, I've gotten actually quite a flood of mail over the last 4.5 years thanking me from people who
said
that
wonderful to hear.
It's helped them become vegan. So I think we just need to build that more,
You emphasize the subject of food choices, of course, in the book, and the treatment of animals by humans. One central point in this book that I found to be covered so intelligently, and perhaps like no other way I've ever seen anyone write before, was on the theme of how the way we treat animals affects us as human beings. I find this to be a valiant point that is covered because I really think that a lot of people don't see the connection between how our world and society of human beings is affected in response to our treatment of animals. I find that one argument that people often use is, why should we care about animals when we need to be caring about humans first? Can you talk to us about this issue and why it matters for humans to care about their treatment of animals?
Yeah, that's a great question, Allison. You know, I really think that when people say that someone who's a vegan, say, or someone who's a vegetarian, especially as someone who's not eating any animal foods, that somehow there's this underlying perception that this person must care more about animals than we do about people. And nothing could actually be further from the truth than this. I think people who begin to see the interconnectedness of violence and misery and suffering that is caused by human exploitation and violence towards others, realize that violence towards animals is not only a precursor to violence towards humans, but that violence towards animals actually underlies violence towards humans. And if we really are serious about reducing the amount of violence towards humans and inequality and injustice and so forth, then there's no better way to start than with our massive mistreatment of animals for food, because human beings on some level can retaliate. You know, human beings typically will retaliate in some way toward us if they can or try, and very often society will retaliate if I rob or steal or harm another human being. Animals, on the other hand, really don't retaliate. They're not able to, but our violence towards them retaliates. Pigs who are hyper-confined, chickens who are, have their beaks, you know, seared off, and cows who have their babies stolen, they don't sue us. They don't turn around and form, you know, liberation movements, or, you know, they're really vulnerable in our hands. And so this is where the great test is. You know, since they can't retaliate, how do we treat them? If we can really exploit them, and do we really get away with it? And what I've discovered is we absolutely never get away with it, that the violence that we commit towards animals routinely for food, and it's over 75 million animals a day in the United States alone, and I know in North America, it's, in Canada, it's probably similar rate per capita, that this is a massive amount of violence. And so the violence that we commit toward them retaliates, and the main thing is that it creates this mentality within us from the time we're born, really, of disconnectedness, of reductionism, of reducing beings to things and to commodities, and it's underlying that is a mentality of privilege that allows and really, I would say, causes a system that we find ourselves in, our cultural, you know, all the institutions in this system that we're in, that just breeds inequity and breeds the kind of economic and social structures that cause starvation and violence towards the earth, and, you know, the environmental devastation that we see, and the inability for us to really effectively solve those problems. This mentality of violence towards animals is what keeps us from being able to solve our problems. And when someone, you know, eats animal foods, it's sort of hidden from us the fact that we're eating huge amounts of grain that were that went to feed animals while people are starving, for example, or we're eating huge amounts of fish, which are causing an enormous amount of devastation to the ecosystems in order to eat dairy products and eggs. Most people don't realize, for example, that dairy cows eat more fish in North America than human beings do. There's a huge amount of environmental devastation caused by eating animal foods. So when we eat lower on the food chain, when we move toward a plant-powered diet, we're creating a whole range of benevolent repercussions that bless human beings. There's less starvation. There's less violence. People don't have to kill and stab animals, which brings out the worst in them. There's more food for everyone. There's a better earth for our children. We create a an environment of equality and justice. It's really the foundation for harmony between humans.
And you say that there will never be world peace as long as people are eating animals and animal products as foods. Can you tell us how you've arrived at this conviction?
You know, it's not just me that said that. Pythagoras, going way back 2,500 years ago, said the same thing. Tolstoy said the same thing. But I think what I've done is maybe for the first time, is show how the mentality that's required by our food choices is the exact same mentality that is underlying our inability to stop warfare. And also, not just the mentality of disconnectedness, of exclusion, of commodification of life, of seeing ourselves essentially as predatory. This is a might makes right attitude that we use against millions, billions of animals. And what history has shown us, whatever we do to animals, we eventually do to humans. So there's this mentality in place. Plus, I show in the World Peace Diet how the social organization that emerged when we started herding animals, you know, owning them as property for food, is a social organization of a wealthy elite that from the very beginning has promoted warfare and slavery and the domination of women and the feminine dimension. And that this is really the heart and soul of what eating animal foods is. It's war against animals. It's a war against the earth. It's war against other humans. It's a violent, a whole series of violent actions against female animals primarily, whose babies are stolen, who are serially forcibly impregnated. And so we have to reduce our sensitivity to our own inner wisdom and compassion. And that is the, you know, in order to eat animal foods, in order to eat especially the way we raise them. And that's the underlying foundation of war. And I think the people who read the World Peace Diet see that this is the hidden cause of war.
I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver. Dr. Tuttle, how do you think that we can reach out to others to understand this message, and why do you think the message of compassion for all living creatures seems to be one that people generally don't put into practice in their daily lives?
Yes. How can we reach out to others? You know, I think the best way, first of all, obviously, is for individuals to look into their own behavior and attitudes and make a change, make a positive transformation of their own attitudes and behaviors so that we're not actually taking on our wallets and paying for someone else to stab and hyper-confine and mutilate other sentient beings. When we do that, we will find, and I've heard this over and over again from people, that we feel much better about ourselves as people. Our self-esteem goes up. We start respecting ourselves more because we are respecting others more. And with this change in behavior, and we stop actually taking out our wallets and paying for violence, we will find our consciousness gets clearer. We're more able to look deeply into what's actually happening in our planet, and then we will feel within ourselves a sense of joy at the beauty of this beautiful planet, and also a sense of urgency to do what we can to help spread a message of compassion and kindness to all life. And I think each person has to find their own unique way of doing that. You know, some people do it through art, some through education, some through teaching cooking classes or opening restaurants or writing letters or writing articles or making music or, you know, whatever, or passing laws. I mean, we all have, every institution in our culture is involved with killing animals for food. It's in every institution in our culture is oriented around that. And so whatever institution in our culture we are most connected with, if we're in religion or education or advertising or whatever it is, we can find a way, I think, to bring the message to other people. And that's a great sense, I think there's a great sense of joy and fulfillment when we begin to do that.
That's really well said. Thank you. Can you tell us about your successful campaign to get the World Peace Diet to number one on Amazon, which it reached just a few weeks ago on March 14th, and how this was accomplished? I find this just to be an amazing thing that you did accomplish.
Thank you. Yeah, I think in a way that was one of the miracles of the modern times.
The internet, social networking.
Really? Yeah, it was. It was internet social networking. That's exactly what it was. Basically, in a nutshell, the World Peace Diet had already been out for, like I say, about 4 years, 4.5 years, and it was doing pretty well in terms of sales. I mean, it's published by Lantern Books in New York City. It had gone into its fifth printing. It was out of the 150 books that are printed by Lantern Books, it was the number one best-selling book. And mainly, I think, because I did so much traveling and lecturing, and people would buy the books. Plus, people really liked it when they order it for friends and things. But still, in terms of overall sales, it was around, on Amazon, it was around number 20,000, usually 20,000 to 30,000, which, you know, is pretty far down below number one. And although it's pretty high considering they have about 3 million books, I guess. But anyway, I decided about 4 months ago that it would be great to see if we could, together as a community of people who are concerned about the earth and health and peace and spirituality, come together and promote the World Peace Diet as a vehicle for raising consciousness in our culture. So I started sending emails to contacts that I had made over the last 5 or 6 years, or even longer, people in the vegan movement, the vegetarian movement, the animal rights movement, the environmental movement, the social justice movement, the peace movement, the yoga movement, the spirituality movement, you know, all these different movements that care about the earth and people and animals and future generations, and said, let's everyone on March 12th, I sort of picked a date, and I picked March 12th because I was like a few months out. I said, let's everybody on March 12th just send an email to everyone on your list and encourage them to buy a copy of the World Peace Diet. And if people buy a copy of the book on that day, they'll get some great bonus gifts that are also donated basically by the same people. They're, you know, discounts at vegan resorts and vegan foods and vegan shopping places and raw food recipes and macrobiotic things and all kinds of things like that. So it all came together. We had over 100 different groups participating, and on March 12th, this sort of campaign started. I call it the March 12th World Peace Diet Compassion and Health Campaign, and World Peace Diet went from number 20,000, and then by Thursday night, it already started going. It was up to about 1,000, I guess, and then on Friday morning, it was up in the top 100, and then later in the day, it was up in the top 50, and then in the top 10. And then the following day, it got all the way up to number 5, and then that night, it hit number 1 on Amazon. It was kind of like, woo, you know?
It must be an amazing feeling,
and amazing.
You didn't even have to go on Oprah.
Yeah. Right, that was the thing. You know, people always say you'll never get on unless you get on Oprah or you get Fox News behind
you. This book deserves to be
read.
It deserves to be number 1, and there's so many interesting topics in it that I'd love to discuss maybe with you another time, but we are running out of time, but I wanted to move on to some other aspects of your life. Dr. Tettle, you are also a gifted musician and composer as well. We've been playing some of your pieces on the show today. Your music is beautiful, and I've had the pleasure of seeing you play piano in person last year at the Animal Rights Conference. It was really, really well done. As I said, we've been playing some pieces from your CD, Animal Songs, today on the show, and I wonder if you could just tell us really quickly what inspired you to create the pieces that are each named after and representative of a different animal on the CD.
I just felt always, and this CD came out a good probably 15 years ago, and as a vegan, even then I'd been a vegan for probably 15 years, and I felt that it would be great to create a musical album that celebrates animals, and not just the sort of wolves and dolphins and whales, who are somewhat sort of romantic. I mean, they're beautiful, wonderful creatures, of course, and so we have their voices on the album, but we also have the voices of pigs, cows, turkeys, ducks, geese, and lambs, and animals that are seen more as food. And so I just I just tuned into each of these animals and created, composed music that to me reflected their unique qualities and beauty, and then blended in segments of their voices. And people really, over the years have told me how much they enjoyed it, especially children just love that album. Kids love animals anyway. Mm-hmm. People who have companion animals say that the companion animals, like their dogs or whatever, if they have to leave them at home when they go out, they always turn it on so they have companionship a little
bit.
It's
very soothing music.
And, it's very soothing. And
yeah.
I've even had a few people tell me they've gone vegan, listening to it. So,
whoa, you didn't even have to write a book. All you had to do was make
say
a
word.
Right. Right, just create the music, yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tuttle. Like I said, I'd love to have you on the show maybe another time to talk about many more things. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I want to
mm-hmm. encourage everyone to visit Will Tuttle's website, which is the worldpeacediet.com, for more information on his books, his music, his lectures, and much more. And, of course, I hope this interview session with Dr. Tuttle has encouraged you to go out and read the book, The World Peace Diet, for yourself, which is easily available to purchase at Amazon. And it's also available for free on Dr. Tuttle's website as a PDF at worldpeacediet.org/download.htm. So there's really no excuse to read it. Thank you very much, Dr. Tuttle.
Great. Thank you so much. It's been great to share some time together, and I just wish you all the best.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
At this time, I'd like to remind our listeners that we want to hear from you. Join our Facebook group, Animal Voices Vancouver. Tweet us at Animal Voices YVR or email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Next week, we'll be interviewing Dr. Dana Medoro, an associate professor in the University of Manitoba and a member of the Farm Animal Welfare Committee with the Winnipeg Humane Society. She'll be talking to us about her work on banning extreme confinement systems in the pig farming industry. You have been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio, and we're going to close off the show with the Lamb Song from Dr. Will Tuttle. Take care.
See you next week.
Bye.